Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. It's the last day, but it's the best day. Good to have you all here this morning. I hope you have had a wonderful Ursa event thus far. But as we always say, we do save the best to last. And on the Thursday, we have some amazing presentations for you. And I'm sure you'll agree that this morning was well worth struggling out of your bed, getting that quick early morning workout and recharging in preparation for today's presentation. This morning's presentation is called Extraordinary Club Management. And if you were to take that word extraordinary, you'd agree that there's nothing ordinary about our presenter this morning. He has an incredibly strong track record in the industry. I'd like to do the respect firstly and read his bio, as I should respectfully do. Bill McBride manages all aspects of commercial club operations for Club One and Frogs Fitness as a chief operating officer. His charter is to consistently improve operational standards and the quality of Club One and Frogs Fitness sites and delivery systems. He has an extensive background in the industry, including serving as Senior Vice President, Sales and Business Development at Sport and Health on the East Coast. McBride holds a Bachelor's in Business Administration from East Coast Carolinas University, which explains... You've got a funny accent. You know that?
I do.
I just thought I'd mention that.
I appreciate that.
Yeah. If you were at the Ursa board meeting this week, you would have seen Bill being voted on as a new member of the board. So as of effective July 1, we'll have Bill's expertise assisting in the growth of the industry further. Bill is a true friend of the industry, and I'm very proud to call him my friend. And so without further ado, I'd like to introduce your friend, Mr. Bill McBride.
Paul, thank you very much. I forgot what I did for you that you needed to pay me back for with that kind introduction. But I appreciate it. Dun, dun, great. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
I figured if Paul did the introduction, I wouldn't have to tell you anything about me. I'm a person that started in the industry when I was 18 years old in sales. Sales is my passion. I think that sales is the engine of the industry, and by sales I mean spreading the advocacy about healthy lifestyles and exercise adherence. I don't think you can separate sales and service. I wanted to take you through today a presentation that kind of goes through the journey of a member. How many of you saw me speak here, or in San Diego rather, last year? Show of hands for a minute, please. Okay, good, because this is only about 40%, 35% new information from last year. This is a presentation I started 4 years ago, and every year I take it and refine it based on the learnings of the last year. And I benchmark it at the end with regard to our customer satisfaction over the last 4 years. And every year I add the data from the next year to show some of the things that we did that had incremental impact. But before we get started, I want to get everybody warmed up just a little bit. And also, it puts my nerves at ease and makes me more relaxed when I get yelled at. So, we're going to do a quick little exercise. You guys are Team A. You guys are Team B. Got it? Okay, when I say good morning, we're going to have a great session. Team A, you say, no, it's all gloom and doom. As loud as you can. You got it? Team B, you say, things have never been better. Got it? Okay. Good morning. We're going to have a great session. Team A.
No.
Man, that's depressing. Good morning. We're going to have a wonderful session. So, how many of you are really excited about hearing in every session, in every news channel, in every newspaper, the tragic nature of the economy? Has anyone in the room not heard that there's a little bit of a retraction going on out there? Good. So we don't have to spend much time on that. But I do want to tell a story about mindset. Because I'm talking to operators, and we all are starting the same thing, right? We go, how are things going? And then you go, we're surviving. Things are tough. Feels different. It's not as easy as it was. I actually have to think and work now. They don't just come in. Feel like they're getting taking advantage of me because I'm actually getting paid to actually do stuff now. So you go through this thing, right? And then you want to be prudent and realistic with your staff And you might want to do some cutbacks, and you might want to do some expense control, and you might want to do some creative programming. So you portray the message of kind of what's going on out there. But then you wind up sometimes depressing your team. Anybody got a team that you kind of depressed by accident talking about the reality of the circumstances? Show of hands. No one? Anyone totally thrilled with their business and doesn't want it to get any better? So, we do this thing, right? But you also don't want to be too Pollyanna and too upbeat, because then they won't know there's a little bit of a challenge going on, and they might take not do what you need them to do with regard to really sharpening the pencil and running as lean and efficiently and those kind of things. So it's a kind of a dance, right? Obama. Everything's going to be great, hope, change. And then he spent several weeks bringing that expectation down and resetting the reality, right? And you do this dance with regard to the reality and the optimism as a leader. How many of you in this room are optimists versus pessimists? Right? How many of you are responsible people? How many of you are irresponsible? Isn't that cool? Responsibility is one of those things that no one's irresponsible if you ask them. But we know they're out there. So we're going to talk a little bit about what you do in your business through this journey of a life of a member and how a member looks at the decisions you're making in your delivery system. Okay? Make sense? So it's an outward looking versus inward looking. And sometimes in marketing and operations, I catch myself focused on the internal, how I'm designing the structure, how I'm setting the policy or procedure, how I'm naming and structuring the program. And then we go out and it didn't work, and we say, why didn't it work? And somebody says, well, you know, because nobody really wanted that. You didn't find out what they wanted or needed. So we're going to talk a little bit about the experience design. We have Frogs Fitness in San Diego, Club One in Northern California. We manage clubs around the country for work sites. We manage Jewish Community Center's fitness component for them in certain circumstances. So we have multiple channels, some of which are commercial, some of which are corporate. Is this an opportunity or is this a crisis? And what do leaders do? Leaders lead. And I wanted to share a story when I was in my, being that I'm only 23 now, when I was in my early teens, I was managing a club in Arlington, Virginia. It was in what was called the Crystal City Underground. It was called Crystal Gateway for Sport and Health. It was previously called a Skyline Club. And it was a basement club that was 35,000 square feet with racquetball, basketball, nice group studio, sauna steam, whirlpool, full amenities, really nice club, but no windows, no natural light, low ceilings, and in a basement. And it had indoor tennis, and it was really kind of a quirky, neat little club. But it had a weird demographic, because it was less than a mile from the Pentagon, so there were different military-affiliated groups. There were defense contractors, there was a little bit of corporate, there was a little bit of residential, there was a little bit of military. And I had this one group, NAVAIR, NAVC was what they were called. And they had thousands and thousands and thousands of members and of employees. But I had like 195, 250 members from like this 5,000 population. My penetration rate of this group was just dismal. But in this club, 250 members was 10% of the membership base. Okay? So it was announced that they were moving out and vacating the space. And they were my major tenant above me. What would a 10 to 12% decrease in your membership overnight do to your business? Okay? So they were moving out, and we still were solid, and everything was good, and we had sister clubs. There was a total of 4 clubs at the time that this happened. So my staff was a bit freaked out, because if we lose 12% of our members, do we need 12% less staff? Will we run the business differently? Will we survive? Will we go out of business? Will this site close? There's all that stuff going on in people's mind. You know what I mean? So being the young general manager that I was, reading all the right general manager books that you read when you're trying to pretend to know what you're doing, I decided that I needed to lead. And so I made up a story that was fictitious in my mind. I said to my team and to my bosses, don't worry about it. This is the best thing that could have happened. And my boss is like, young guy, got that rookie curve where, you know, he has no mental limitations in his mind yet until he fails a few times. Staff was like, really? And I see, yeah, what's going to happen is these people were terrible prospects for this business. And we had very low penetration. So no matter who comes in, more of them will join than this group. Based on, it just couldn't be any less. So I jokingly call it, I faked it until I made it, right? I just kept saying, this is the greatest thing. We just got to weather 6 months. Just weather 6 months is the greatest thing. We're going to get backfilled. I don't know who's going to be there yet, but they're going to join. We're going to be ready for them. Then they announced they were renovating the Pentagon. And they were doing each section of the Pentagon in a separate time frame. Over 10 years, they were going to do the Pentagon renovations. So all these people in the Pentagon needed to have office space really close to the Pentagon. So guess who they sent over to this space? Air Force personnel that were very highly critical to missions and logistics, and they had a fitness requirement based on that group. So the government authorized what was called at the time an Air Force blanket purchase agreement, meaning that that group could spend whatever they needed to spend up to $500,000 on what they needed with regard to their fitness requirement. So I said, great, let's get your folks enrolled. It'll be an initiation fee of $125, and it'll be $75 a month. And they said, no, Bill, that's not going to work. The government will not pay initiation fees, or at least the Air Force won't right now. And I said, well, without the initiation fee, I have to raise the dues, because that's part of our pricing model. So I said, if I take the initiation fee out and divide that by 12 and go in, it came out to be $81.25 a month. So I said, your rate will be $81.25 a month, not $75. And that's our corporate rate and corporate pricing, but with an initiation fee built into dues. So they said, okay. And I had the luckily advantage of a sole source provider. I was the only fitness club within walking distance, so they could do their fitness requirement. So over the course of the next 18 months, 24 months, that group wound up giving me $300,000 to $400,000 a year in dues. Okay? And that club, in the following 12 months, had the best year ever. Now, what does that tell you? I was extremely lucky. I was very lucky. And you're luckiest when you believe good things are going to happen. Right? And you know, whatever you intend and expect is what normally happens, or something closer to that, right? So I caution all of us to look for the opportunities, to fake it till we make it, to make sure our team really gets the opportunity here. And what is the opportunity here? The opportunity here is obvious. This thing is thinning the herd with regard to practices that don't work. This challenge in the world right now is forcing you to be the best damn consultant you can be to your own business. You are questioning things you've never questioned in years. You are doing things and trying things that you would have not tried 18 months ago. Am I correct? And it's exciting. And it's rejuvenating. And it's scary. And it's uncertain, but it's forcing us to really look at our businesses on a really close, intimate touch level, because our membership is fragile now, more so than ever, and they need us more now than ever. Am I right? Is it Ellen that says, ladies, am I right? So that's just a perspective I want us to try and figure out how we really, really do this thing. Has anybody seen the Golden Rake story? And this is a neat story for right now about our staff. How many of you are trying to do a little more with a little less people? I'll read it so it's more dramatic. Once upon a time, the president of a company was walking around the company with a consultant. They happened upon a young fellow raking leaves. But to both men's dismay, the gardener is using a rake with only three teeth. The president says, "What are you doing?" The gardener replies, "I'm raking leaves." The president asks, "Why are you using that rake? You're not picking up many leaves." The gardener states, "This is what they gave me." Finally, the president says, "Why didn't you get a better rake?" The gardener replies, "That's not my job." As the president walks away, visibly angry, he states, as a matter of fact, that this is a perfect example of what's wrong with my company. People complain about not having the right tools, parts, drawings, and everything else. This shows the lack of urgency the president feels is dragging the company down. He asks, out of frustration, "How are we ever going to make it if we can't even get someone a decent rake? Got to find that supervisor and be certain that gardener gets a better rake." The consultant asks, "Are you certain the supervisor is responsible?" "Absolutely," retorts the president. "His job is to make certain his people have the right tools. If the supervisor is responsible, how would you solve this problem?" "More training, better selection, maybe a new supervisor." The consultant counters, "Are those actions going to get you where you need to be?" Puzzled, the president says, "What do you mean by that? What is it going to take to turn this place around? What do you want to create?" He replies, "Well, now if I'm going to be a hands-on leader, if I'm going to demonstrate a personal sense of urgency, I'm going to live the vision, I guess I'll have to get the rake myself." If every person in this company doesn't get a sense of urgency about meeting their commitments, we're in big trouble. Okay, said the consultant. If everyone must be committed to doing his or her job no matter what it takes, then who must ultimately take responsibility in this case? The president gets it. Says the gardener has to be responsible. He's the only one that can make sure he has the right rake. He realizes that the supervisor and ultimately every individual is responsible for building commitment, but not chasing rakes. It's not about chasing rakes. It's about commitment. And every person who saw this rake was responsible, and that's about culture. So, why I bring this story up, as silly as it might be, we have employees in our clubs that are waiting for you to give them the rake or the better rake. And even the committed ones sometimes are enabled to not step outside and take responsibility for their own productivity. And they fall into the system. And what's going to take us to get from 15%, 16%, 12%, pick your percent, of the population working out to a major shift with all those other 80+ percent of people working out is a shift of responsibility and acceptance and people doing things differently in this industry than we've always done. So I'm facing a situation in our organization where what do? Do we do pay cuts across the board or do we do layoffs? Do we cancel the carpet cleaning service and buy a carpet cleaner and have staff clean? Do we reduce hours of housekeepers? What do we do? But what I know, regardless of what we do, at the end of the day, my people are going to have to step up and be more committed, more engaged, more service-oriented, more out of the box, more innovative, more entrepreneurial than they've ever been before for me to thrive. And I don't want to survive, I want to thrive. And right now I feel I'm focused a little more on surviving. Not that we're in any imminent peril, but it's an uncertain time. And so I challenge you to share this type of story with your team when you talk about commitment and involvement, because if my job is to rake leaves, that's completely different from keeping my property pristine, warm, safe, and engaging. Right? Are you a reek? That's like leaf and rake made into a brand new word. Are you a reek leafer? Are you a leaf raker? Or are you the person that is in charge of the environment and safety of our grounds? Okay? Those are different mindsets with how you approach the role. So, what are you doing differently in the realm of sales, retention, programming, expense management? What are you doing that's unique? And what are you trying and experimenting? And we're going to spend some time at the end with Q&A. And I really want to encourage you when we get to that point that you share some of the things that you're doing, because the learning and the experience in this room, I'm sure, is much more dramatic than what I can bring to the table today. So we're going to walk in the steps of a member and go down the path. Did everybody see? He's a little older now, but doesn't that just make you want to smile? And that's how you want every member greeted when they walk in, right? You know, by staff like that. He's 3, and I'm about to put him to work. So what things are you doing? And we'll talk a little bit about best practices and ideas toward the end when we do the Q&A session. So we're going to kind of walk through the steps of a member. How many of you are married? Show of hands. Excellent. Fine institution. Most people start on the right-hand side in life, and they work their way left. And so those of you married, how many of you wanted to have a happy marriage the day you got married? It was a goal to have a happy marriage. Okay. How many of you, if I gave you a little quiz on what it takes to have a happy marriage, you would probably pass it? Compassion, integrity, loving, caring, compromising, do what she says. Right? You could nail it. Like, if it's a multiple choice, you could get them all and select all. And you would. And he knows what it takes to have a happy marriage. He passed the test. Okay? How many of you... Oh, I'm sorry, I won't do that because all of you are happily married. But how many people in the world that wanted to have a happy marriage when they got married, knew what to do and aced the test as far as knowledge, have happy marriages? Old stats say 50% of the people get divorced, 60% get divorced second time. How many people are married that don't get divorced that aren't happy? Does anyone know anyone married that's not happy? Show of hands. Not you. Okay, so... I assert that paradigm does not work, and you can apply it to everything. You can apply it to baseball, dancing, sports, life, anything, weight loss. How many people that are severely obese, if they could just dream and wave a magic wand, would be fit, healthy people? A lot of them. How many people know what to do? Move more, eat less. Sometimes psychological intervention, sometimes medical intervention, okay? How many people that go through that drill get fit and healthy? Okay, less than 20%. How many obese people that go down that journey revert back? A lot, right? So this model doesn't work, so the concept is the other side. Back to the gardener versus the person that wants to keep an inviting, safe environment. I am not a guy that wanted to have a happy marriage. I am a great spouse. Okay? I'm a great spouse, and now I don't have to worry about anything else, because I'll always do what great spouses do. I'll do that checklist of things I do, and I'll do it more consistently, because I can't operate inconsistent with how I see myself, and by doing that, I'll have what great spouses have, and that usually would be a happy marriage, depending on if she's mad at me or not. So, the concept isn't about 5 pounds, 6 pounds, 7 pound weight loss, what's your goals? The concept is what's going to change in your life when you achieve these goals? How do you see yourself? How's your life going to be different? Why is this important to you? It's peeling back that behavioral onion to the core. I've got a friend that is very obsessed with a lot of things professionally and very controlling personally. And we peeled him back in a coaching conversation that we were all kind of exposing ourselves and talking about what it takes to motivate each one of us around fitness and weight loss. And when we peeled this individual back, we got to a core. And his core was he does not want anyone to control his life in any way, shape, or form. And he does so many things to succeed, be financially successful, so that he can have in his mind what he defines as freedom. Okay? So when you peel this person back, his exercise, his lifestyle, all gets peeled back to him wanting to be fit, healthy, vital, productive, so he can provide for his family financially and establish enough wealth to have freedom. Okay? That's a lot different of a goal of peeling him back, why he exercises four times a week, than if you peeled me back. And so really understanding the why is the starting point before you can help anyone with regard to an adequate solution. So the concept is, who are you going to be? I joke around, like I did about the whoever comes in will be bigger, that I'm the best health club operator in the country. Now, I don't do that because I have a super inflated ego. I do that because if I'm trying and thinking that I'm the best health club operator in the country, I will do more things consistent with that than if I'm thinking I'm just an average health club operator. Are you with me? So I'm not running around telling my staff, you are lucky to work for me. Oh, actually, I do tell them that. But it's not because I'm the best health club operator. But the concept is a paradigm shift with regard to that. And this is powerful for member staff. It's a powerful way to have conversation around what you're up to. We all have whys that we're in the business. I'm not going to go through that. This slide deck is a little larger than we're going to spend today because URSA really wants us to do more Q&A and sharing based on ideas. So some of the stuff I'm just going to skim through. The whole deck is on the internet, and I've added a few in the last couple of weeks based on, you know, some things that we've seen at this conference. So if you want this updated version, just leave me your card and I'll email you the whole presentation, okay, at the end. So Jack Welch says if he were running a company, three things he'd look at. No more. As far as the keys. Customer satisfaction, employee satisfaction, and cash flow. And for me, this is never been more true. I need my employees not to get morale issued and freaked out right now. I need my customers being wild like they've never been wild before, and I need to protect my cash flow right now. How many of you are in the same boat as me? How many of you are afraid of water and never been in a boat? How many of you have a nice boat and you'd like to invite me over? So what we're doing at Club One right now is we're really going, okay, what is the core? What is the fundamentals? Being that we can't do everything and we've always tried to do more than we could ever do anyway, what are we going to not do right now and really drill down and focus on? This slide should have been over on two slides earlier. User error. Basically, I'll let you read this. I won't read it. But again, are you mopping floors or are you sending a man to the moon? So when we talk about this member experience, and you hear the word used a lot, all right? But in this context, it's you're designing the member experience, or you're letting it happen haphazardly. How many of you have utter confidence, 100%, that every single member interaction, every single hour that you open is executed exactly as you would hope and expect it to be? Show of hands. Wow, I knew I got the honest group. So it depends on what? What factors go into the ultimate member experience in your eyes? What's the one thing, the one dynamic that you always struggle with? Anyone?
Consistency
and consistency by the staff member, right? If I go to your club and I get Johnny, and Johnny rocks my world, I run around and tell everybody I know what a great club you have. And if I get Emily, and Emily rolled her eyes at me because she thought it was ridiculous that I was asking for another towel, I'll tell everybody in the world what obnoxious people are over there, right? You are so hostage to your staff. They are your brand. They are your livelihood. If you don't have staff, you are the livelihood and the brand for your employer. And the inconsistencies that go around that are critical, and they're more important than ever. So when you design this experience and you're thinking about how a member is going to interface with your facility and your service and your programs and your people, you start with just a clear focus and vision of exactly what you're trying to solve. You got to have the right people, you got to have a feedback loop, and you got to be able to change it whenever you discover different things. How many of you have ever had somebody design a program in your club that failed? Come on, show your hands. And how many of you knew it was a really good program by a really good trainer or person, well conceived, but nobody bought it? Because you didn't ask or learn what the person wanted you to solve. And a lot of times we do this internal creative focus versus really understanding it. So figuring out the use in order to design around the use. The experience is the product. If you design things well, they're invisible. How many of you feel cold? How many of you feel warm? How many of you feel just right? How many of you were not thinking about the air conditioning before I brought that up? Okay? It's invisible when it's right. Okay? It's when it's wrong that things are challenged. So designing invisibility in the experience to where people just flow through and it just feels right. You've gone to clubs, right? And within 30, 45 seconds, you know if the club's got it or if the club doesn't from an energy level, right? You walk in and you can feel the energy. Positive, negative, good, bad, vibe, flat, right? And when you get it all right, it's invisible. People just feel good. They're not analyzing the pieces. They're feeling the experience. So really focusing on all these touch points that create your product, because they all do come together to create what you offer. When you get it right, it integrates the user with the club in a different way. And where I'm looking internally to solve the external needs, how hard do we make it to join our clubs? I've got to do it in person in most clubs versus online. I've got to pay a fee. I might have to sign an agreement or a contract. I've got to schedule sometime in the future a time to talk to somebody that can get me started. I've got to hope they're qualified, kind, and considerate and relate to me and our personalities match. There's a lot of luck of the draw that goes into that, and we create these. So I'm not suggesting I have a solution for how you break all that down and do this completely radical new model. But what can you do to integrate the use of your product in the easiest way, shape, or form? How many of you fly Southwest Airlines? How many of you fly United? I fly both and like both for different reasons. But user-friendly, no one beats Southwest. Their website is so easy. And if you go to terms and conditions of your ticket at Southwest, it's a couple paragraphs of layman speak. Go to United's terms and conditions. You can't read it. You just know that if anything goes wrong with your flight, it's probably not good for you. So integrating the user and the club, it's learned, but it's not open to introspection. And that, by that I mean, once you figure out this design, have you ever had a really good idea that other people were doing and you brought it back to your team and they said, oh, this is great, but we can make it better? If we just tweak it and do this and we tweak it and do that? Anybody? Try doing it with 20 clubs, okay? I come back and I get a really good idea, right? And or I had three clubs that did it and it was beautiful and it worked. And we go, okay, this is great. This worked in three clubs, so it'll work in 20. Or it's got a better shot at working in 20 than 20 different ways that people are trying to do it. So we roll it out as a scalable program. And every one of them changes it just a little bit. And then I have inconsistent revenue results, inconsistent frequency results, inconsistent brand. Okay, because I made a scalable global program that everybody changed a little bit. Who's got the best hamburger in the entire world? McDonald's. Why does McDonald's have the best hamburger in the world? Because it's the same everywhere and you know exactly what to expect and you're never surprised. And if you go to McDonald's, you're not going to be disappointed. Okay? It is by far not the best hamburger in the world, but it is consistent. So what's better? Consistent good or once in a while great? You know? Now, consistent great is the goal. But so really thinking through, I want you to learn this design that we've set up, this experience we're going to deliver. And I want you to learn it and understand it and get it. But I don't want you to think about it so much that you try to change and alter it other than putting your personality into what you do. It is invisible. It's multidisciplinary. You can't have silo operations. We're trying some really interesting stuff right now where we're taking group fitness directors and making them fitness directors. Okay? And making them fitness directors and group fitness directors in combined roles. Why am I doing that? Because for years I've struggled with the silo of group fitness and the silo of personal training and private fitness and getting them to cross-pollinate with instructors and getting this group to recommend this solution and this group to recommend this solution so we have an integrated solution to the member. And so it gets better and it depends on the personalities and it's this and that, but it's structurally set up as two silos. So if you set it up as we have one fitness leader. Now, I'm not suggesting any of this. I'm just sharing a different thought process to some of the things that we do. So one person, both departments. Now I have no barriers, no silos. I can pay this person more money than I would have been able to pay them otherwise. They will do a lot more work. I've reduced payroll, promoted somebody, and broken down silos. And that's all sounding pretty good. If it works. What I like about it is they have the personality piece to get more into the group training model, which is critical to our revenue. My non-dues revenue is down dramatically from a year ago. Why? Did I do something different? Or are people being more cautious with their spending? Or are they being more cautious with their spending and my solution no longer meets their needs based on their current mindset? So we're doing a lot more lower priced group support community kind of programming. Who's going to be better at leading those type of initiatives over the next 2 years? A traditional fitness manager that's focused on private training or a group person that's really comfortable with group programming or a combination? Now, sometimes your group people don't have the same certification, education, and exercise science as your fitness people. So how do you get them trained in that, or how do you teach? So there's a lot of stuff that goes into this. But at the end of the day, we're trying it in some clubs, okay? And so it's multidisciplinary. All your departments have got to weave together for one ultimate product delivery. It obviously becomes a part of the culture. And you're trying to generate certain behavioral outcomes for people. Some guy named Lewin, very, very smart, smart man. You know how I know he's smart? He's got his own equation. How many of you have your own equation? I don't have an equation. I don't even know how to... So Lewin came up with his equation that said behavior is a function of a person in their environment. Behavior is a function of a person in their environment. How many of you have ever heard or read about the, Stockholm study? Okay. So they took normal people and made some of them prison guards and some of them prisoners. And forgive me for those of you that are really close to this that know the story, because I'm using some poetic license just with the concept of the story, because I don't recall all the details. But they wanted to see how normal people would behave in a position of control and power over prisoners and how prisoners would behave in that captive environment. And they did this study for several weeks or a few short weeks. And it got so out of hand with the abuses of the guards that they had to stop the study early. Okay? Now, these are people that all had similar moral value systems, but they were put in an environment that influenced their behavior. there are people that have mob mentality, right? Mobs behave differently than individuals might behave on their own. You know that concept. You guys behaved exactly like Ursa wanted you to behave today. You came in on time. You sat down. You didn't talk while I was talking. This environment created a behavior, right? And your clubs do that every day. What behavior do your clubs create? Do they, when I walk in your front door, what's the spacing to the front desk? Is it so far that I'm a little self-conscious because I feel like you're getting to check me up and down and two staff are there and I'm walking like I'm going down a hallway and everybody is, because then that's psychologically going to imprint that, God, I always feel uptight when I walk in there. Or is it really up close and personal where I walk in and I'm greeted with a happy face, but I still have my personal space? Everything you do creates a behavior. How are your doors positioned on group fitness? Do you have two doors? Do you keep both of them open or just one open? I mean, everything you do creates a response behavior. It at least influences the behavior. Positioning of equipment, which way it's facing, staff interactions. So I'm not going to go through all the litany of options, but walk through your club with a different look in your eye and look at what behavior is this encouraging when I walk in here? What behavior when I go into my orientation? What behavior when I walk into a class? When I talk to a membership or salesperson? What am I feeling about that with regard to how I feel like I need to act? And you can make so many little things that are adjustments. If you feel like this might be stressful or high pressure because the office is too cluttered or the furniture is too big for the room, those are easy things to fix. That can have a dramatic impact on results. So just being cognizant of that. Because the ultimate goal to create value in our product is coming up with something that is first useful. Does this solve a problem that people want to be solved? I struggle with the usefulness of our product for 80% of the people. We have this brilliant product with brilliant people that love what they do, with great equipment, and it's extremely useful, but 80% of the people don't get it. Why? Why don't 80% of the people get it? So we have a useful product. For some reason, it's not usable or desirable for those 80% of the people. Curves is brilliant. We have any Curves people here? I mean, you talk about something that changed the face of impacting people that wouldn't go to a club. Because they're, in a lot of ways, Curves are less useful than a typical big box from a strictly service program perspective, more useful in a community comfort support situation, but so useful, but it was desirable and it was easy to use. And so many times we don't make things easy to use. We overcomplicate things that we do. So when it all comes together, is you got the usefulness, you got the sex appeal, the desirability, and it's easy to use. And Southwest has me because I hate booking things online. I hate it. So I have a choice now in most of my flights from San Diego, Virgin, Southwest, or JetBlue. I love all three of the experiences. They're all clean, friendly, safe, on time. Everything's good about all three. But I go to Southwest just because they've got me so easy to use that website. And I can do it really fast. And that's so usable that wins for me. And they got me earlier than JetBlue and Virgin, so I'm more comfortable with that. But I won't leave because I'm comfortable. And there's lessons there. Everybody okay? Need a massage break? All right, stand up. Shimmy over to the person in front of you. This way. Seriously. Everybody face this way. Face this way. All right, now shimmy up to the person in front of you. Come on. You guys make a group. All right. Rub the shoulders. Rub it. Come on. Hey, in the back. Let's go. Rub the shoulders. Rub it. Okay, now face this way. Because there's some people on the ends. Let's go. Okay, sit down. Okay, so you got to know your potatoes because you're now selling a value proposition that's more important than ever. So the two farm wagons stood in the public market, both loaded up with potatoes. Customer stops by and says, "How much are your potatoes today?" "Dollar and a quarter." "Oh, I only paid a dollar last time. Potatoes gone up." Okay, it's kind of like some of our clubs, warm and friendly. Goes to the next wagon. Sees Mom McGuire. She knows her potatoes. So these are especially fine white potatoes. "We only raise the kind with small eyes, so there's no waste when you peel them. Then we sort them by sizes. In each bag, you'll find a large one for boiling up, cutting up, smaller size for baking. The baking size cooks quickly and uniformly. You won't have any problem with how wonderful those taste. They're also clean. We don't have any dirt in our bag. You're only paying for the potatoes. You can put this in your parlor. You can buy a bag for $1.65. Shall I put them in your car for you?" Woman bought two of Mom McGuire's potatoes when she thought a dollar and a quarter was too much. Can you believe the reality of that story? People will pay more if they perceive they are getting a value to what they're paying. How many of you did a dues increase this year? How many of you didn't do a dues increase? Okay. So I decided it was necessary to do a dues increase. And I got a lot of pushback from people in my organization. "This is not the time to do a dues increase. This is the time to lower people's dues. This is the time to show more appreciation." I said, "Well, we do a dues increase every year. And we should continue with what we do, but we should do it differently. What if we did a dues increase and did it a little more modest, $3 to $5, but instead of just doing the dues increase, we said if you commit to us for a year, we won't do the dues increase. And better yet, if you want to prepay up to a certain number of prepaids, we'll give you a discount. You have options, and we want you to use options in these challenging times." What do you think the pushback I got from my dues increase was? So minimal. All my long-term members that felt like they shouldn't be increased because they're long-term members just committed for a year. "No worries. I'm going to be here, Bill. I'll stay for another year. Thanks for giving me the option not to have the dues increase this year." Some people prepaid and some people paid the dues increase. So far, it's been the smoothest dues increase I've ever done. Okay? Because I gave people options, and I gave them a way out, and their way out will short-term influence better retention. And I'm not talking about locking them into a year contract and holding them to the legal letter of the contract. That's not what I'm talking about. They made a psychological commitment to the lifestyle. Okay? They're committed to the lifestyle. It's like selling memberships, right? If you sell somebody, "Hey, don't worry about it, just join. If it doesn't work out, you can always quit. It's just 30-day notice." That's not how you should sell a health club membership. You know, you should be selling a health club membership. Yes, it is month to month, so you have flexibility, but we don't ever want to see you quit. We want you to engage in this lifestyle and be here forever. So knowing your potatoes, what is the value proposition that you have, and how does that relate to members right now? How is your value proposition unique, special, engaging, and going to deliver for your members right now? And it all goes back to your people. And it's so cliche, but this is a quick way, if you want to do performance evaluations on all your people on the flight home, here it is. This is a values performance grid that General Electric used, or Jack Welch used, at various points in his career. And what it means is the top right is your high value, high performer. This is that employee like you. Okay? that's a super achiever, that always does a great job, that's aligned with the company vision, values, mission, purpose. And how do you manage those people? Anyone? Someone? Please? Give them a goal. Challenge them. They already have goals and they're already challenged. You're both very right in motivating people, but you get out of their way. You keep supporting them. You let them do their thing and you say, keep going. I'll stay out of your way. Right? Those are the people that are self-motivated drivers, and you just simply support them and recognize them and appreciate them. The bottom quadrant, bottom left, these are the low-value, low-performers. They're not allowed aligned with your vision. They're not they not aligned with your uniform and your standards of excellence and your quality control, and they're not performing very well. How do you handle those people?
Give them the opportunity to go somewhere else.
Any military buffs? There was a quote I just saw. It was a terrible negative war slogan, but it was interesting. It was, the 82nd Airborne provides the enemy with the maximum opportunity to give his life for his country. I didn't say it was pretty, but it was pretty clear how they felt. Those people need to go, and they need to go with no guilt and no delay. The bottom right, these are high performers, but they're not aligned value-wise. These are people that generate $10,000, $15,000, $12,000 in personal training revenue, but they're not team players. They're cancerous to the organization. They're toxic to their employees. What do you do with those people?
Give them the opportunity to change.
Give them the opportunity to change. Exactly. How many people right now would like to lose a trainer that does $15,000 a month off your payroll? Usually 30, 60, 90 days coaching, try to reset them. And if you can't do that, what do you have to do? They have to go, even if it hurts you in the short term, because they're toxic. And then the top left, this is that super staff member that is so gung-ho and on board, but can't perform at all. They're just terrible at their job. I mean, it's bad. Have you known any front desk people that you really kind of loved them, but they were great one-on-one with members, but they couldn't multitask at all? And they're really doing a good job with one member, and everybody loves them one-on-one, but when you got your rush and people are trying to get in and phones are ringing, they're just kind of, right? And it's like, what do you do with that person? You find them into a role that they can do well in, and that may mean in another company. But you try to get them in a role that they'll be successful with. So that's a really easy way. And this is how we do performance reviews every month on the whole team. And we do an annual formal in your file. But this is a good way for a GM to go, okay, who's on my team? Which box do they fit in? And that gives you your management plan. You just covered exactly what you need to do for each one of your staff members that are challenged in whatever way. So this is a really quick and easy way to do performance reviews and evaluate who your key players are as you make decisions on who are the best people to make the biggest contribution for your delivery system. 20 basics or fundamentals that we're not going to go over right now. They're in the packet. And what they are is, if you expect certain things to happen, it's best to articulate them somehow. Have you ever walked through a club and were upset about things you saw, but you realized that the person had been with you 7 months and you never really talked to them about that particular thing, but you knew that they should just have been smart enough to know that that was a bad idea? Anybody? And so I do that, right? I was doing that and I was walking around, you know, and it's not like, how stupid can you be? You don't know that this is not the optimal way to service our members. Just kidding. But they don't get it, and you never told them. You go, you know what, I've never told them. So what I did is I said, what are the 20 things that bug me the most in health clubs? And I wrote them down. And I gave them to everybody in the organization. And said,
Please don't mess up these 20 things. Please, please don't mess up these 20 things. And then it was really cool because now I can talk about the 20 things and not an uncomfortable conversation about something I've never told you I expected. Okay? So I might go to an employee and go, "Why aren't you in uniform?" "I didn't know I was supposed to wear a uniform." So now it's like, "Yes, you did. I know it because it's on the 20 things I gave you." It's only 20 things. So the conversation becomes around objective metrics of expectation, not around personality, annoyances. And so the concept here is you can look at my 20 things and agree or disagree. But whatever you expect is your basic fundamentals. Make sure everybody knows and they're clear so that you can manage from an objective standpoint and not a personality standpoint. I get very close to some of my staff members that have been with me for a long time. I've got 5 or 6 people that came from D.C. market out to California over the last 5 years to work with me. And they're more than employees. They're dear friends. But when it comes to things that are below the expectation level, there is no confusion about the conversation because it's not about our friendship, our personalities. It's about this thing that everybody committed to. So it makes those conversations very easy. So articulate what your basics are. There's a lot of things that go into creating wow or delight. You all have your own purpose statements, mission statements, those kinds of things. This is just a simple generic version of people are unfit and would like to be fit and healthy. You have some version of you want to improve the quality of their life. And there's things that go into that that make that happen or get in the way of that happening. And one is your organization. Okay? The back of the house, if you're a single club operator, the corporate office, the regional office, whatever your circumstance is, you have a organizational piece that is back of the house. And sometimes that gets in the way, and sometimes that supports the way. You have the member and all the stuff that goes on in the member's head and psyche. You have your club team. You have a version of you need to enroll them, you need to connect with them, and you need to keep them. So this kind of drills it down into a matter of looking at everything you do. Now, our retention model is retention is everything you do. It is not a program. You have to enroll people in a lifestyle, not do a transactional sale. You have to get them plugged in within 30 days so they find their place in the club. You have to connect with them so they fit in and find their area of play. You have to intervene when they fail, and you have to create loyalty. People go through various stages of change. You all know that. Where are they in their coachability? Where are they in their readiness to change? Where are they in their personality with regard to their relationship around fitness? These are important things that you've got to really comprehend when you are trying to design this experience. You have a lot of things that go into enrollment. You market. You call, you get calls, people show up, you do a solution needs analysis, you tour them, and then hopefully you enroll them in a lifestyle. All of these things require thought process to how they should flow and what the member experiences. When I started with Club One, we were doing a lot of facilities features-based marketing. We were great clubs, they're clean, look at the pretty picture, join now, zero enrollment fee, $25 enrollment fee, 3-day pass, whatever, but a lot of pretty feature-oriented marketing. Then we started really getting excited about some of the programs that were getting scalable and brandable. So we started doing program marketing, people marketing. Now we're kind of between program and through the connection piece. Now we're doing, our staff will know your name. We're warm, friendly, supporting. We're here for you. That kind of messaging. Then we're going to expand that into the results of some of these programs that we support you in and really get into the results piece. And at the end of the day, the utopian goal for us is how do we put a solution in front of somebody just in time when they need that solution? We're doing a lot of stuff with data mining, member knowledge, some really breakthrough stuff that hopefully next year I'll be able to share with you. Learning things about our members that you wouldn't believe. We're sorting, cutting, we're trying to be more savvy. I took every member in my system and I said, who's ever bought one massage but not bought a package of massages. Okay? And then I sent all of those people a crazy three-package deal. And 15% of them bought a package for the first time ever in massage. Okay? So I'm trying to... Who are my best customers? Do you know who your best customers are? What if your best customer that spends $7,000 a year in services quits their membership? Would you know that you lost them other than happenstance? What if you knew that your best customer was quitting and you could call them and say, where are you going? And they say, oh, you know, I'm not really connected to the club. I mean, I love my trainer and stuff, but I think I'm going to train at home and hire an independent. What if we just gave you your membership free? We don't want to see you go. Okay? $7,000 a year member in services, was that worth comping dues of 50 bucks or whatever, 70 bucks, whatever your dues? I mean, I don't know. I don't know what the right answer is. But do you know if your best customers were to leave? Do you know the common traits with your best customers? Those are things that we're going to have to get more sophisticated as an industry to be able to market and solve specific solutions for people just in time. There's lots of programs around that. What I want to introduce today is just simply the concepts of thinking about how do I do business differently. You have a lot of former members. I calculated that I have 100,000 former members from the last 5 years. 100,000 former members from the last 5 years. Okay? That's a powerful database. Okay? Say 40% are even bad addresses, whatever. Still, it's a lot of people. What can I do with that database? Maybe they don't want to belong to a club anymore or join another club. Maybe I disappointed them. What if they got involved in a six-week program to re-earn their trust? What if I got them into a year program at a ridiculous price to re-earn their trust? I don't know. What about all the prospects you've toured in the last year that haven't been contacted in 6 months or more that you have as a database? What can you do with that information? Maybe it's not a membership. Maybe it's a program. I don't know. But it's going to require for us a different way of thinking and processing information in our marketing messaging. Prospect calls, you engage. You do whatever you do in order to convert that call to an appointment. And not just an appointment, but an appointment where somebody wants to come in. How many of you like to go to parties? How many of you like to go to parties? Okay. So, I need a volunteer. What's your name, ma'am?
Susan.
Okay, Susan. So I want you to call me up and ask me about the party I'm having on Friday night. Ring, 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 ring. Ring, 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 ring. Hello, this is Bill. Good, Susan. How are you? What can I do for you?
Hey, I heard you're having a party on Friday. What time should I be there?
Well, we're having a party at 7. I'm not sure when people are going to show up. You know, I don't even know how many people are going to come.
Can I bring something?
Yeah. You can bring whatever you want. You know where I live, right? So just bring whatever you want. And
can I get directions?
Well, you know, it's over. You just take a left on Terson Street, and then it's down three houses on the right.
Yeah, I don't know where that is. I'm coming from over at the
Susan, mall. Can you call Bob and get... Okay, Bob knows where I live. I got to finish. Can you call Bob and get the directions from Bob? Bob really knows where I live.
Do you have Bob's number?
No, but I know he's listed. He's listed in the phone book. Oh, I mean, I know, there's no phone books anymore. Google him.
Bill, how do you spell Bob's last name?
Bob Evans. Evans. Bob Evans. Okay. So, need another volunteer. What's your name, sir?
Mark.
How are you doing today? All right. Ring, 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 ring. Hello.
Hey, how are
you? Good. Who's this? This Mark?
It's Mark.
Mark, what's happening?
It's
you coming to the party Friday night?
Oh,
man, Dave Matthews is going to be here. Brittany's just confirmed. We got 4 acres blocked off.
I got the catering company's confirmed. We're going to have champagne fountain. I don't know if they're going to run out of shrimp, so I went ahead and got some lobster. I mean, this thing's going to be off the hook. It is going to be out of control. So far, I've had about 300 people that are really excited to come. Everything's covered. When you come in, it's all valet. You just pull in. We'll take care of it. But I really want you here. Can you be here at 6:45 so I can get you really up close to the bands? All right. You know where it's going to be, right? Yeah, it's on Martin Street. And give me your email, and I'll send you the whole thing so you've got it right there on the email. You can print that out so you've got it handy when you come on over. Okay. Oh, man, I can't wait to see you. Okay. That's what happens in our clubs every day on the phone, right? You're having a party at your club, all right? You're having a party at your club, and you want people to come and be excited about it. Which party are you having? Are you having that party that I had with Susan, or are you having this party? And if you think about hosting a party as your mindset on everything you do, I want you to come to my home, and I want it to be spotless. I want it to be engaging. I want you to be excited. I want to have fun, and I want you to know how much I want you here. And that's really what we want to convey on the phone. So when they show up, they're wow. They're like, oh, my God, this place is great. And there's a professionalism. You go. How many people go to the dentist? How many people don't go to the dentist? Man, I got the honest group and the good teeth group. I win. So, you go to the dentist and there's a process, right? You show up, they do certain things, they do certain things. I have never gone to the dentist and said, hey, guys, I'm changing things. I want to see the dentist before the hygienist. The dentist, you know, he makes too much money to see your teeth when they're still dirty. He only looks at them when they're clean. That's not how we do it. Okay? So, there's a process. Does your club have processes that are professional and that dictate how you're going to control the experience to maximize the delivery based on their needs? We use an intake form. It's kind of lengthy. We ask them to fill it out. Sometimes they fill out all of it. Sometimes they don't. And then we ask some questions around it. We do our needs analysis, take notes on the back. But what's important is this middle section has 3, 6, 12 things. Increase endurance, strength, lose 10 pounds, participate in Pilates yoga, motivation through group fitness. So those four buckets dictate how we do an orientation. Okay? People self-select in how we're going to tailor their orientation. Who's going to do it? How they're going to do what we call welcome tracks to make sure they start the right way. So we try to learn how we're going to match people in a very unsophisticated way, very unsophisticated way, just to make it a little bit better, a little bit more close to the mark until we evolve further. But what's your process with regard to everything you need? What are you trying to solve? What are you trying to uncover? What are you trying to do with regard to a member? Member tours your club. How do you make them feel as if they belong? How do they get enrolled? What are you learning to onboard them properly? Do you know about what motivates them from an exercise point of view versus what equipment they think they might like? Internal marker. How do you do the onboarding process? Is it consistent? Is every trainer doing onboarding in a fashion that you want them to do? Or is every trainer doing it based on what they have as a background? If I go and do an orientation with John, will I get a postural analysis? If I go with Emily, will I get something dramatically different? So a lot of times our trainers modify your standard stuff to their personality. And getting started, as we know, is the most critical. People want to know, right out of the gate, more so now than ever, where do I fit in? How many of you hate working out? One person. Two persons. You are so weird. You are so weird. So, most people don't want to work out, and there's even less that want to train. Okay? People want to play. People want to have fun. People want to be comfortable. People want to know there's people like them. They want to feel welcome and accepted. They don't want to be judged. They want to be themselves. They want to be their best self. Okay? How many of you, when you get an obese prospect or an overweight prospect, do you immediately grab them and pinch them and measure their adipose tissue? But wait, it gets better. Some of us put it into a computer and then print it out and then show them. It is confirmed, indeed, sir, you are overweight. I know you said you were overweight when you came, but we just had to make sure. And it's true. So now that we have the proof, what are you going to do about it? Okay. Not exactly warm, comfortable, friendly, non-intimidating way to engage somebody. All right? They don't want to be judged. What I'm finding now is it's more important than ever to do 4 to 6 week programs that are group and lower cost that solve solutions that people are looking at. Now, I don't have a $250,000 PT a month program. But the program that I do have is getting smaller right now, except for Pilates. And I go, why is my Pilates program growing and my personal training program declining? Well, it's 6 week series with a stop date, so people have a sense of completion. It's $15 to $25 a session based on the number of reformers in the studio. Everybody stays together through the program. If you're a Monday-Tuesday person, you stay with the Monday-Tuesday group and you form a community and you progress together for years and years and years. It builds a sense of community. So what are you doing in the program arena to serve people's financial needs and solutions and build a sense of community? And by the way, even at $15 or $20 a head with six people, most trainers will make more money if they're percentage-based than they would on an individual session. So the trainer makes more money. The member gets a better deal. The sense of community is increased. All great, great things. Are we doing enough of these types of programs? I don't know. Is there an opportunity to do more? I don't know. But I know that I've got to shift from traditional personal training to group training to offset the declines in the traditional 5% of the membership. For us, 5 to 6% of the members do personal training year after year after year after year. I can't grow that number to 20% under my current model. So, what should I need to do something differently. I need to focus on a better solution because 95, 94% of my members aren't attractive to that solution. So looking at that, obviously finding their area of play in the club, and then you do all that right and life is good. And then something happens. Something gets in the way. I'm hurt, I'm busy, I'm tired. This is hard. I don't feel good, I don't feel comfortable. And I say, help me, save me, support me, hold me accountable, get me back in the game. I came to you for support. You told me you would give it to me. Now, I might not say that to you or your team, but that's what I'm saying to myself. And it's your responsibility to do something. What are you going to do to intervene and support those members when they leave before they make a final quit decision? There's lots of things we do with that. We monitor usage, and when usage drops over 4 week period, we give it 4 weeks for false positives, we try to intervene with email messaging, phone calls from the club, some things like that to intervene, because somebody after 4 weeks of declined usage hasn't made a decision to quit yet. They just have declined usage. But if you let it go out to 12 weeks, they will make a decision to quit. So if you catch them at 4 to 6 weeks before they made a decision to quit, but when they started struggling with the behavior, it's your best opportunity to intervene and get them back into a program. Or the member goes missing, right? They just disappear. They get hurt, they get stressed, they get depressed, and they stop coming to the club. Life happens, stuff gets in the way. Are you finding people are a little more fragile now than ever? They're kind of not necessarily looking for reasons to quit, but they're definitely more apt to quit when anything slips up. People leave, majority of the reason people leave, 68% of people leave businesses because of attitude and difference by the staff. Nothing went right, nothing went wrong. I'm just not happy with how you guys behave. I don't feel loved, appreciated. I don't feel like you want me to come to your party. I feel like you're okay that I'm there. I feel like Susan. Right? Susan, right? Susan was okay to be at my party, but I sure didn't make her feel like I wanted her to be there. Do your members have to Google you to learn about you? Or do you talk to them? People want you to care, right? Pretty basic, pretty obvious. So they go away, they go missing. You got to have a recovery plan. How are you going to get them back engaged? They came back. You did it. You caught them at the 4 weeks. You got them re-engaged. They're excited. Why did they return? They returned because you cared and you intervened, you supported them, you gave them what your value proposition promised them. So then you screw up. How many of you have ever screwed up? Run out of towels, broken sauna, trainer punch a member in the face, anything, right? Sometimes bad things happen in our clubs, right? So you screw up, and what's the key to screwing up? Quick recovery. If I lose my luggage on an airline, I'm really upset. They lost my underwear, the most intimate of all my apparel. But if they find my luggage, give me a $50 credit, deliver it to my hotel, what am I saying about that airline? Man, that's a great airline. They stole my luggage. They stole my underwear. But now I love them. So it's the recovery that builds the loyalty. People truck along with normal expectations. When you disappoint them, they think you are incompetent or don't care. When you fix it, after they thought you were incompetent or don't care, they are wild and think the world of you. So, it's very important in these economic times that you create things to go wrong that you can immediately fix to build brand loyalty. Luckily, you have enough things that go wrong that you don't have to create them, if you're like me. So, but the key is, what are you going to do to fix things and recover when anything goes wrong? What are you going to do for your staff to where they have the responsibility for making sure they have the right rake to fix things when they go wrong? Because quickly resolved complaints build the best brand loyalty. No complaints, the worst. People that never complain about anything don't care that much about you. Unresolved complaints are better than no complaints because at least they care enough to complain. You with me? And it's immediate. When you fix things immediately, the brand loyalty you build is amazing, and people go, wow, you rock. You are the best. And then you've gotten loyalty, and you get the comments like this. I would never give up my health club membership even though I lost my job. I love the staff. I love the club. I have friends here. I belong here. I'm part of this community. This is my lifestyle. I'm feeling good. I got results. Your people are wonderful. They helped me and supported me, and I like them. There are other people like me here. I belong to this community. And people don't quit their communities. What are the communities and the lifestyle that you are creating in the design of your member experience that causes them to not ever want to give it up? Notice these are not pictures of clubs. It's pictures of people living their lifestyle that your club complements. It's my club. I belong here and I'm not leaving. Okay, that's the brand loyalty you're looking for. You want them to be raving fans, okay? Raving fans. So we broke it down into these categories. Facilities is the foundation. You got to have clean, adequate, supplied, safe facilities. Programs is the next piece. You got to have good variety offerings, programs of engagement. Your people are the next piece. They've got to be top flight, service oriented, wow factor, delight, inclusive, not exclusive. And when you get all that together and create that synergistic wow, you have optimal member experience, the wow factor. Now, where is Club One? In 2005, we were a 19 on what's called a Net Promoter Score. A Net Promoter Score is a score that Gallup, Harvard Business Review, and Gallup, Harvard Business Review published from Gallup, that said, on a scale of 1 to 10, how likely are you to recommend this business to someone else? Okay? On a scale of 1 to 10, how likely are you to recommend this business to someone else? 9s and 10s were promoters. 6s and belows were detractors. Sevens and eights were neutral. No statistical relevance to your growth. You take your promoters minus your detractors and you get a net promoter score. Southwest Airlines that I mentioned earlier, Starbucks, Powerbar, those companies are in the 60s and higher. Average companies across the spectrum of all industries was 16. Club One scored a 19. I was 3 points better than the average of all industry. I was very excited because there was opportunity for growth. 2006, we got it to 26. 2007, 32. 2008, 39. We now do it quarterly, and then we do one big annual survey. This is the first question on all the surveys. We use SurveyMonkey for the quarterly ones. It's very easy. You don't have to have any sophisticated survey model. 10 questions, that being one of them. And so what we found was we looked at club scores over the period of time and how they performed and what the challenges were with management and facilities and all those things along the way. And we learned that in the 0 to 20% range, we had nailed the facility piece, but nothing else. And clubs that were in the 20 to 30% range, we were getting some good variety with classes and programs, but we weren't real wow factor. And then when we broke 30, we were starting to see, hey, these clubs are really doing well. 30 to 50%, we were nailing the people piece. But when you get it all together to be super in that 60%, we have 5 or 6, 7 clubs out of 20 that are there, but the average for the company isn't. So we're at 39, so we're dead center in this people piece. So I'm trying to break that 50% threshold. And what the point is, I'm getting better every year. And our teams are learning and growing, and they're focused on the member experience. So the point of this is a really easy one-question survey that you can gauge growth opportunity and where challenges are. And when you do some neat stuff, like you take a club score, and then you put its sales for the year, and you put its EBITDA for the year, and then you put its attrition for the year, and you compare it year to year, the higher scores have the higher performance. So that's pretty cool. So I leave you with one more story, and it's basically, who packed your parachute? As a leader, do you honor and appreciate the power of we? Do you stop and give genuine thanks to your teams, especially when they're feeling like they're getting pounded and beaten down? So Captain Charles Plum, a graduate of the Naval Academy, flew 74 combat missions and was shot down. He was captured, spent 2,103 days in captivity. He survived. He received the Silver Star, Bronze Star, Legion of Merit, 2 Purple Hearts, came back home and shared his experiences and challenges. Shortly after he came home, he and his wife were sitting in a restaurant. A man came over and said, "You're Plum," his name. "You flew jet fighters in Vietnam from aircraft carrier Kitty Hawk. You were shot down." He was surprised and said, "How in the world do you know that?" The man replied, "I packed your parachute." Charlie looked up with surprise. The man pumped his hand, gave 2 thumbs up, and said, "I guess it worked." Charlie stood to shake the man's hand and assured him, "It most certainly did work. If it had not worked, I would not be here today." Couldn't sleep, wondered if he might have seen him and not even said good morning. "How are you?" Thought for many hours how the sailor spent bending over a table, bottom of the ship, carefully folding, weaving the shrouds. Began to realize that along with physical parachute, he needed mental, emotional, spiritual parachutes. He called on all these supports during his long and painful ordeal. How many times a week, a month, day do you pass on the opportunity to thank those in our organizations that are packing our parachutes, that are making us successful and delivering for our members? So I leave you with that thought. I hope this was beneficial. I'd be glad to take any questions or thoughts or ideas or things that you've done that you think were pertinent and would like to share with the group. Anything? Yes, sir. I give people the option of 1 year and month to month, and the 1 year is rolled a month to month at the end. And I make the 1 year very attractive because I'm trying to make it affordable for people to commit. And I will give up some money right now for commitment right now. My issue in Q4 was more about attrition than sales. My sales were pretty solid in Q4, down a little bit, but my attrition really was out of control. and I lost 1,000 members over 20 clubs in Q4, which really is affecting me this year. And then January and February, I'm flat, but I've seen a reverse. I've seen attrition stabilize for me, and my sales are now dipping. So Q4 was more attrition than sales, and now I'm seeing more sales than attrition. So a decrease in sales, 5% increase in attrition in Q4, and 7% reduction in program revenue. Now we had a really good year because we picked up a lot of contracts, but from a core membership mature club point, it's anyone's guess right now for me what my net membership is going to be over the next 3 months. So to answer your question, an attractive, affordable, reasonable month-to-month, but something a little sweeter for a 1 year, because anything we can do right now to help people commit to the lifestyle I just don't believe in 3-year, 4-year, long-term kind of, but I do believe in selling commitment and longevity in the sales process, because you don't want people coming in with a short-term attitude. If it gets hard, I'll just stop, so. Any other questions? I'll be around if you have questions that you want to give me one on. Thank you very much.